Hey everyone, and welcome to yet another episode of the Irish Knicks Fan Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Evers, and on the show we talk about beer, basketball, and business. So let's get right into it. In this episode, we're going to talk about two games. The big win that we had against the Pistons on Friday night, and a bit of a WTF of a game against the OKC Thunder. Just now tonight, actually. And then I want to finish out the podcast by talking a little bit about spending time with family over the holidays and some tips on how to survive with your sanity. So let's get right into it. So in this Friday night game against the Detroit Pistons, I was actually really excited for it. Full disclosure, I watched it a day late this time too, because I was away with my family, myself and the rest of my family, my sister and my parents. We'd gone to Birmingham to go to a classic car show in the NEC Arena. It was an incredible experience. Actually really enjoyed the couple of days. It was pretty intense, which I'll get into later. But I'm really, really glad that we did it. But as a result, I had to watch the game on Saturday night on my laptop instead of my usual big kick-ass TV here in my apartment. So it was an absolutely insane performance. First of all, really loved the New York Knicks and Kith collaboration on that night. Thought it looked badass, and I thought that the merch that they were kind of giving out for free and everything about the Knicks Kith logo on the night looked absolutely sick. That would have been a night that I would absolutely have loved to be at the Garden getting some freebies, because Kith is an amazing brand. If you haven't heard of it, you should definitely check them out. They're doing some pretty hypey but still pretty like classically beautiful stuff. The game started off with a bang. RJ, you could tell from the early stages, he was going to have an absolutely gigantic performance. Actually finished the game with 30 points, 5 rebounds and 5 assists. Was looking like, you know, the superstar that we know he will turn into. He now needs to find a way to do that more consistently over time and make it undeniable and unquestionable for anybody in the rest of the league to ever call into question his level of superstardom. But he really looked the part tonight, or on that Friday night. Julius had another huge game, 21 points, 5 assists, 8 rebounds. Just an absolute bruiser as always. And honestly, it was just good to see him so happy and smiling and just in such good form. He just clearly seems in a much better headspace through these first handful of games of the 2022 season. A big change from where things were last year, and I just couldn't be happier to see it. Overall, the team had an incredible performance, but one of the biggest standouts apart from RJ was our guy, Big Shot Brunson, or I think there was another name that Mr. Big Show, was 26 points, 7 assists, 1 rebound. Don't think he had any turnovers. You could tell from the early going as well that he was really up for this game, and so were the rest of the guys. This was an interesting experience to watch the game with headphones on in an Airbnb with all of your family asleep upstairs, because the amount of times I caught myself where I would have shouted here at home and just like, oh, like it was an it was definitely an interesting experience, but really enjoyed it. Our guys showed up from the first minute of the first quarter with a clear intent that they were not going to lose this game. They maintain their intensity, the level of their, like, the consistency of their execution, how they were running plays for each other, how they were playing hard, playing like they gave a shit, like I always say, and honestly just operating like a real team. Like, this was the version of the New York Knicks that we know they can play up to. This is the version of the Knicks that we always talk about being on the fringes of their potential. And, as per usual, not only did we have our three-headed snake in the game, but we had valuable contributions from none other than Obi Toppin, 8 points, 5 rebounds, 1 assist. Again, felt like he might have much bigger impact on the game. Also with Emmanuel Quickley, 8 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, 1 assist. Actually identical to Obi, so nice balanced approach there off the bench. Number of very consistent defensive contributions from the rest of the team, individually and collectively. And honestly, even though the game finished as a final score of 121-112, it wasn't as close as that score might indicate. And honestly, the way our guys were playing, the way that they were so bought in to all, like chasing down all the 50-50 balls, attacking the boards, maintaining that intensity overall, and just like really like, with that bit of fuck you underneath every action they took for the whole game. I really didn't think that this game was ever in question. And it's always good to see RJ have a 30-point game, which is the second that he's had so far this season. So I was going to do a separate podcast about tonight's game, but I really just had to shoehorn it in here because I don't even know what that game was against the OKC Thunder. In a direct comparison to our game against Detroit on Friday, where we looked like a well-oiled machine. We looked like everybody on the team knew their role, was playing for each other, was not thinking about their stats, and everything was just clicking in the flow of the offense. We were playing hard on D. This game against the Thunder was insane. So I'll start off by saying that it finished with a final score of 145, 135, and we still lost the game by 10. Like, this was in regulation. This was not in a double overtime game, a triple overtime game. Sure, the Knicks scored 48 points at the end of the first quarter. That's sometimes been a score that people have struggled, or teams have struggled to get to by half time. Like, everybody was just on fire. But the problem was, the OKC Thunder were the same. This clearly was some kind of handshake agreement between the two coaches at the beginning of the game that we were just not going to play any defense, that it was going to be like, for my basketball heads out there, have you ever watched one of those under 14 or under 11 or, young teams where it's just literally, okay, you run up and down the court and you try to score. Okay, it's my turn. Okay, it's my turn. Okay, it's my turn. And it's just back and forth. No defense, no structure, just no sense of anything. That's what this game was. I mean, I can't deny that there were some good performances. I mean, Julius had 25 points, 10 rebounds, 3 assists. Obviously, huge performance. That's all in 33 minutes. Isaiah Hartenstein even had 14 points and 7 rebounds. Cam Reddish, Mr. Bum Reddish himself, had the game of his life with 26 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. Jalen Brunson, 17 points, 7 rebounds. Emmanuel Quickley knocked himself out of his slump and was really the only player, as things got a little bit out of hand towards the end, that really did not want to lose this game, finished with 24 points and 5 assists. You get the idea. Obi finished with 10 points as well. And Jericho Sims had Jericho Jumpman Sims, or AKA Sad Boy Sims, had easily the dunk of the season so far for the Knicks. That guy can jump so damn fucking high. Like, my God, he was way up there. It felt like his torso was like clear above the rim. It was insane. If you have not seen that highlight, I would highly recommend you find it. It was probably the one highlight of the game for me. You'll notice that there was a very clear absence from that list of many stats. My guy RJ, our guy RJ, had an absolute stinker of a game. Only played 19 minutes, 4 points, no assists, 1 rebound. That is simply, not good enough. And I don't really know what to say here. I mean, first of all, if you score 135 points in a game, you absolutely should not be losing that game. That is the thing that needs to be said out front. I'm pretty sure that we did not stop a single three-pointer from going in for the entire game, or at least it felt like that. So our three-point defense definitely let us down. But, I mean, look, when you lose a game by 10 points and you already got 135 on the boards, it's not a question of your offense. It's how much did you really give a shit about defense, if at all, during this game? Like, it just blows my mind that, you know, we score 48 points in this first quarter, you know, that we were up as many as 13 or 14 points in the second quarter, and it seems okay, we're clicking, we're going, like, this is a game that we need to win. Like, it goes without saying, for anybody that's been paying attention in the last year or two, but especially this year, but just for the uninitiated, the OKC Thunder are actively looking to tank, which means that they're trying to lose as many games as possible to increase the percentage likelihoods that they'll get the highest possible draft odds for their next new big, I guess, young superstar. But why that's important is that next season, Victor Wembanyama, the French phenom himself, is going to go number one overall. He basically looks like if LeBron and Giannis had a baby. He's 7'4", has the fluidity of a guard, and shoots three-pointers like 1-2. He's insane. But it's basically the race for Victor at this point, and the OKC Thunder are right at the top of that race. And instead of kicking the shit out of these guys like we should have, we just decided to play one of the single best offensive games that we've played as a team so far this season. But on the defensive end, we're like, meh, you can score. You can just do whatever you want. What's defense? How do I get into a defensive stance? How do I challenge a three-point shot? How do I close out to any shooter to make it even just that tiniest bit more, difficult? Like, it was just all defensive efficiency went out the window. All defensive fundamentals just were forgotten about, and it was just a game of how many points can you score? No, I'm going to try and score more than that. And it was kind of hard to watch, honestly. I mean, probably more so because we lost. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, or SGA, the young superstar in the OKC Thunder, torched us for 21 points in the third quarter alone, finished with 38, I think. And apparently it's the eighth 30-point-plus game that he's had so far this season. Considering there's only been 13 games, that's pretty good going. And as I said, this team are actively trying to lose. And for the last 4 years, they've basically just got to the point where they've had to sit him for large chunks of the season because he's just too good and he just wins them too many games. And unfortunately, we are on the other end of that buzzsaw tonight because, my God, he's good at basketball. Josh Giddey, the Australian superstar that kind of looks like if Timothy Chalamet decided to play basketball. He had a great game as well. Let me have a look at the stats here. I mean, Josh Giddey had 24 points, 10 rebounds, and 12 assists. And for those at home, that is a triple-double. And you could tell he was everywhere. Honestly, like, I was about to go into a whole spiel about the different performances on the Thunder, but this is a Knicks podcast. And all I can say is we should not be scoring 135 points and losing a game. Julius, well done. But, like, you know, maybe inspire your teammates to play some fucking defense as well. I mean, Jalen Brunson, I have to say, there was a number of moments throughout the game where he really was trying to will the momentum back in our direction. Lots of and one plays, lots of good passing, like as much good defense as he can play. But I mean, it can't always be down to just Jalen to set the tone every single night. It has to be a team effort. Defense is a team sport. Like, as cheesy as that sounds, like, it was just, I was watching it, and I will admit that I'm a little tired. It is late on Sunday night as I record this podcast, so maybe my brain was just a little scrambled from the weekend, but it just seemed like a manic game with manic energy. I mean, we were playing a young, inexperienced bullshit team where, if we had slowed it down, played some half court, set up some half court sets, played, like, run some plays, some fucking plays. Like, I genuinely don't think there was a single play run the entire game. Not one. And if we had just slowed down the pace and used our physicality, used our, like, vast experience comparatively, and just, yeah, just overpowered these motherfuckers. We would have handily beaten them, but instead we played it at their pace. You know, this was a track meet. This was a how quickly can you get a shot up in the shot clock either side of the, you know, either side of the court. And, you know, how, like I said, how many points can you score? Okay, cool. I'm going to try and score more than that. It was just odd, a really odd game. Like, if you saw my Instagram story, you know, all I could say is what the fuck with some dead emojis. That's kind of how I felt. I was like, how do I even make sense of the fact that we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 players in double figures? We had two of those players almost score 30. Like, barring RJ, who had an absolute zero of a game, uncharacteristically, I may add. Like, we played unbelievable offensively. But again, I will say it for the very last time, we are not going to make any impact this year if we can't figure out a way to play defense more consistently. Because how we go from that game against the Pistons, where we honestly were playing just as well as any elite team in the East or in the league overall, you know, where you could tell that every single player, after getting absolutely embarrassed by Brooklyn a couple of days before, said, fuck no, we're not losing tonight, and we are going to do everything in our power on both ends of the court to make sure that we win this fucking game. How we go from that to, you know, under 14s, like, headless chicken basketball, like, anyways, I wish that was one that we could take back. I wish that, but we can't. It's time to move forward. We have 5 more games in the next 7 nights on a West Coast road trip. So you will be getting a lot of podcasts in the next, you'll get basically you're getting 5 more podcasts in the next 7 or 8 days. I will have to watch the games the following day because West Coast starting times suck. It means that most games aren't starting till at least after 2 a.m., which, if I want to be in any way productive the following day, a live watch is just not possible. But I will make sure that we stick to our posting schedule. I will make sure that you get all of my thoughts. I will try and post these podcasts a little bit earlier so that my brain is a little sharper. But my key takeaways from these two games are that we have flashes of greatness. We have shown it multiple times this season, even in the games that we've lost. We have moments where we look like we don't even know what we're doing out there on either end of the court. And we have complete head scratcher moments almost immediately following things where we think, oh fuck, maybe we could make a dent in the playoffs this year. So it's the Knicks roller coaster is an absolute mindfuck. We are going to be here every step of the way. And I'm always going to be honest with you. I'm always going to give you my true, authentic take on what's happening. I'm never going to pull any punches. And with that said, you know, we have five games coming up against tough West Coast opponents. This will be a very formative five games for us. It will really kind of tell us who we really are as a team and what our real aspirations could be for this season. So although we needed both of these games, you know, it would have left us at 7-6 for the year, which actually I think would be quite solid. Instead, we're sitting at one game below 500 at 6-7. So if we could come out of this five-game road trip with three wins under our belt, I'll be very happy. It just, you know, maybe four. Can I be wild and say four out of five? But no, if we can somehow manage to win three out of the next five games and, you know, and put us back in, you know, a good groove on both ends, then I'll be very happy. But let's see. Only time will tell. And as I said, we'll be here every step of the way. So when I come back, I'm going to have a little bit of a ranty rant about spending time with family over the holidays and some tips from my experience this weekend and something that you could that you may be able to take forward and put into practice this year. And we're back. So as mentioned at the beginning of this episode, I have just returned from a little impromptu family trip to Birmingham in the UK, not Alabama, where we went to a classic car convention in the NEC, which, by the way, if you haven't been to the NEC, it's fucking huge. It was actually an incredible day. We arrived late enough in the, early evening on the Friday, and instead of going anywhere, we just had this big Chinese takeaway and sat around a table in the Airbnb and had a few hours of a catch up. Actually, that was like, it's funny, after everything else we've done on this trip, we've all kind of agreed that that first night was probably the highlight, which is surprising considering everything else we fit in. The next day we had a lovely breakfast and then headed on to the car show itself. I think we lasted about 4.5-5 hours. It was pretty incredible actually, because right as we come in the main door, my dad spots his first ever car. Now forgive me, I cannot remember what the make and model was, but if you saw my Instagram story, you would see him standing next to a horrendous kind of mustardy brown small little car, and he got emotional. Like, for all of my Irish audience, we know what Irish dads are like in terms of their lack of emotional range, putting it kindly, this was one of those few times where this really like pulled on his heartstrings, and we got to see him have like a genuine legitimate like emotional reaction to it, which was good to see. And, you know, just showed that it meant a lot to him. And like that reaction alone would have been worth the trip. So, but then immediately following that, we saw this white classic Jag, which you might have also seen on my story. And he was saying he'd love to buy one of these, but they are about 25 to 30 grand at least, so maybe a little bit beyond what he was hoping to spend, or what I might like to spend on his behalf. There was also like a number of times throughout the day where he would spot cars he's had throughout the years, and he would tell me stories associated with it, and it was just an amazing kind of these little pockets of just like personal time with him, and stories that I'd never heard before, you know. There was especially one area which was interesting. It had three Fords in a row, a blue Ford Cortina, which he had in red actually, but he said the car right next to it was the car he had after that, and then the car right next to that was the car that he'd actually traded that car for. So it was strange to continue having these moments where all of these cars that were pretty formidable in his life were like grouped together very strategically so that he could almost literally take a trip down memory lane with me. But you know, whatever divine intervention took place to allow that to happen, I'm grateful for it, because it allowed us to share moments of reminiscing that, again, stories that I've not heard before. You know, my dad is one of the best people on earth, but like isn't exactly the most talkative person, and to just have spent the whole day with him telling me stories, it meant a lot to me. So yeah. And then what was interesting too is that we both went to this show expecting my sister to have zero interest. My mom did in fact have zero interest and went shopping for the day instead. But my sister, who both my dad and I were convinced would be over this within the first hour, was actually like the most interested out of everyone. She was asking questions at every stand about the cars, about the differences, about like what they like about it. She was trying to find out who owned the cars and wanted to have like real conversations with them about it. Her genuine curiosity and her grace with everyone, just like how nice she was, and how considerate, and just how much time she actually genuinely took with each of these people to kind of give them their moment to like talk about their pride and joy, was nice to see. And you know, she showed up as she does, in this vintage outfit that she'd made herself, and she got a lot of compliments. And even though she got, you know, she might have got some direct compliments, she also was getting a lot of indirect compliments that we, myself and my dad heard, you know, as people would walk by. And she was definitely just like kind of in her element in a way that I wasn't expecting. And again, just to see her be just so genuinely curious, was really nice actually. And she did have a bit of a vendetta to get into as many of these cars as possible. And then most people told her to fuck off, but a few didn't. She was able to get into that white Jag at the beginning of the exhibition. We got some great pictures from that you may have seen. She also got to go into one of these tiny little box cars that kind of looked like they were actually her size. Funny side note, when I hugged her, when I saw her for the first time this weekend, because she lives in London, I usually don't get to hug her when she's not wearing some big docks or something, like some mad huge shoes. And like, so she's in her bare feet, and I was like, Jesus, have you shrunk? Because she is quite tiny. But yeah, that those small cars were kind of funny. I did take a number of pictures with her next to those small cars, because like they were Joanne size. But yeah, she also got to get into a very regal looking Rolls Royce that was probably worth about £600,000. I don't see anyone. I didn't see anyone else being allowed in, so I think she was able to charm her way in. And then the big kind of, I guess, disappointment on her side was that she wanted to get into the orange car. I think you all know which car I'm talking about, because I got a lot of questions about that one on my story. Basically, I can't even remember the name now. Jeez, my brain is not working at this time of night. But there was an orange manufacturer back in the 80s who, forgive me, I'll look it up and I'll mention it in the next episode. Who wanted to do a global kind of promotion for their, I guess, their oranges, and they decided they were going to make these insane, like orange cars, like literally looking like giant oranges on wheels, and like actually inside had like loads of like extra seating space and stuff. Like you could definitely like comfortably like have a little of a camping trip or even live in one of these things. But apparently there was only five made ever, one for each continent, and yeah, five in the world, and one of them was there here at this event, and it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. She wasn't allowed to get into that, no matter how much she wanted to. And another personal favorite of mine was this crazy looking, pre-war car that had some hand airbrushed like Joker and Harley Quinn. Like pin-up style art all over it. It was honestly one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And then there was one other one too that was like, I was told was the most Arizona thing ever. It was a gold shimmering car with like a sun on both, like kind of Aztec style sun on the front and back, and pin-up girls on the sun. It's crazy thing. Now, all of this sounds insane, but I did share most of these pictures on my Instagram story. I will share them again with anybody who asks. I have them on my phone. But it was an incredible day. I'd say one of the funniest things of the day for sure is that we didn't realize that on the same day as the car show in the NEC, this is how big it is. They had the car show itself. Bear Grylls was doing a speaking gig. And then Birmingham Comic Con. So every now and again, you'd be walking past a classic car and you just see like the Joker, or we saw an unbelievable Mandalorian at 1.2 early on. And then one of the coolest things that we saw in terms of costumes was the guy dressed as Bucky from Captain America the Winter Soldier, carrying the shield. But like you could tell that this was something that he put a lot of time, energy, and money into. And then his girlfriend was wearing like a classic Wanda, like the black dress with the corset and the little headpiece thing. That again, both of these were not just like bought in a shop or whatever, like in the bag, like one of these, like one of these costume shops. Like this was one of those jobs where they full cosplayed it. They probably made these things from scratch. They paid for, top of the range material and whatever. It just looked legit, looked really, really cool. And I don't think I've ever had the confidence to like go full cosplay and go to a Comic-Con event like that. Don't think I've ever even been to Comic-Con. I went to like a comic book convention in New Jersey of all places once. But that's about as close as I got. Maybe that's a goal for next year. I did actually go to the gym one morning this year, seeing a bunch of people dressed up and thinking, "What is going on?" And Dublin Comic Con was actually happening in the convention center right on the quays, like that day, and I just had no idea, and all the tickets were sold out. So maybe next year for sure. But yeah, but sorry, that was a major, kind of tangent. But yeah, one of the funniest moments I think definitely was when myself and my dad were getting a little bit tired of walking around, and we were kind of leaning towards calling it a day. We found my sister and we're like, "Yeah, so we're gonna probably wrap up soon." And she's like, No, there's still things I want to do." So like, after thinking that she would be the one that would give up on this after like an hour, she actually outlasted both of us. So yeah, well done, Joanne. But it was a great day, and then we came back and chilled for a bit. We booked a table at a place called Noel's, or Noel's. I think it's just Noel's. a very swanky, high-end kind of, if anybody's been to the Ivy in Dublin, that kind of vibe, just like everybody in there dressed to the nines, like young, sexy, beautiful people. And it was unbelievable. What a cool place. Food was absolutely amazing. Had one of the best steaks I've ever had. Fillet or fillet, depending on how fancy you want to be. And then had this interesting vanilla assortment for a dessert with a coffee. One of the best meals I've had. One of the best restaurants I've been to. Great atmosphere, great chats. And it was just like a random high-end, like fancy restaurant in Birmingham. So who knew? I mean, let's just, I mean, I guess it's a lesson that you can really find some of those like hidden gems in the last place you'd expect. My mom was even saying that when she went shopping during, well, while we were at the event, she might have been to a different area, but she wished she'd found this sooner because it was very nice. It was out near the waterfront. It was near a building called The Cube, which was this really interesting hotel slash apartment building that was just very interesting to look at. If you Google The Cube in Birmingham, you'll see it for yourself. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. Had a lot of incredible quality time with my family. It was nice to catch up with them. It was nice to spend some uninterrupted time with them. Nice to actually, I made an intentional decision not to bring my Apple Watch on this trip and to be completely off grid, in terms of thinking about steps or closing my rings or anything like that. It was a very intentional decision and I'm really glad that I did it. But this is kind of what I wanted to talk about. So I got all the nice things out of the way. The not so nice things is that, you know, when you do live alone and you have a certain level of independence and freedom and flexibility to do whatever you want, it is a bit jarring to go from that to 24/7 with your family, no breaks. You know, you go to an event together. And then you come home together. You go to dinner together, then you come home together. The whole day is just like there's no breaks. And I think that in terms of what kind of advice I would give is that after a few testy moments and you know, I think we all know that there's something about spending uninterrupted time with your family. And specific people in your family that just know how to push your buttons in a very specific way. I just started to think about the fact that my parents are probably going to listen to this. Oh, no. Anyway, gonna keep going. But yeah, like when you're with your family for an uninterrupted period of time, there's going to be times where you get on each other's nerves or maybe let's just say, and let's put it nicely, you're not acting as your best self, and maybe you're a little bit less patient and a little bit more snippy, and arguments can arise, even just little quick ones about absolutely nothing, just by sheer proximity to these people. And also can be quite mentally draining too, especially if you're trying to have a number of individual, well, like deeper conversations, but also interacting with the group as a whole. It's for me personally, that's quite difficult. I always function better in one-on-one settings, so anything over that just starts to drain my batteries a little bit. But yeah, with all of that said, I think that one of the things I've learned from this trip is that we should all be okay with just asking for a bit of space, that it's actually healthy to have some boundaries with your family, that it, you know, if you're feeling a bit overwhelmed or you're feeling a bit wound up, let's say, that you do say, hey, do you know what? I'm gonna throw on my headphones, I'm gonna take a walk, and I'll be back in a bit. Or, you know, if you're after being out all day with them and then you go to dinner all evening with them, that it's totally okay to say, do you know what? I might actually take an early night. Just going to go listen to a podcast, get some sleep. But thank you so much for today, and I will see you in the morning. Like, we don't do that with family for some reason. And to be honest, most of us don't even do that with our friends or significant others. I think it's totally okay and very, very much healthy and like in service of your best self that when you feel like your energy reserves are running low, that you take the time and space that you need, that you don't have to apologize for it, that especially with your family, I know it can be harder to tell your mom, hey, I just need a break from this conversation, actually. I'll check back in with you in 20 minutes. I know some of you are saying my mom would slap me or just like, you know, cut me out of the wheel if I ever started trying to, you know, to pull shit like that. But I mean, at the end of the day, like, just because they're your family and you love them deeply doesn't mean that you don't deserve some boundaries and some headspace that belongs to just you and some alone time. I mean, just because you want to be alone for a little bit doesn't mean they have to internalize it and think that it's because you don't want to spend time with them, because that's not really the driver behind it. Again, the whole time I've been saying this, I'm just thinking of the fact that my mom for sure is going to listen to this and say, why didn't you say anything? But that's like part of the problem, right? Is that you don't want to be the one to say, actually, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed right now. I'm going to go take a walk, get some fresh air. I need some time to myself. I'll check back in with you in a while. But I definitely felt the need to do that a couple of times, and I didn't. And as a result, I'm pretty mentally fried now. And it's probably why this podcast in particular is going to be more rambly than usual, even for me. But, you know, just a little tip. You know, as I said, this is your PSA to over the holidays, as we come up to Christmas and beyond, don't be afraid to set those healthy boundaries with your family. It's necessary. Wouldn't you rather be in the best possible headspace with good energy and good vibes than to be that grumpy one in the corner that just keeps picking fights with everyone? Because I know that I caught myself doing that a couple of times. I wanted to call myself out on it on the podcast. But on a funnier note, to end things, this was a 3-bedroom house that we were staying in, our Airbnb in Birmingham. And my parents got a really nice big room. My sister got a lovely big room. And instead, I was stuck in Harry Potter's closet. It was supposed to be a 3rd bedroom. I mean, it had a, you know, window, so at least it wasn't literally a closet, but it had about a 5-foot bed stuck into it, barely any other space for anything else. It was one of the only beds that I have ever slept in, where I would actually wake up multiple times throughout the night just because I was so uncomfortable and couldn't actually find a comfy spot, couldn't even fully stretch out my legs. It was an absolute nightmare. And it's just the idea of me, the big fucking unit that I am, in this tiny little closet for 2 days. It didn't even have a fucking door. It was like a slider that came out. Like, it was almost like where all the the unwanted one in the family better. I don't mean that literally, man, please don't. But it was pretty rough, and just funny considering that I am by far the biggest person in our family, and was in the smallest little box room, the literal box room. And I think this just means that if family, if you're listening, means I have all the leverage when we go to do this all over again when we go to London for Christmas. So I'm getting the nicest room for sure. I will be lobbying pretty hard for that, actually. But I do have to say, to close out the episode, it was an amazing trip overall. Apart, even for, including the prickly moments and all, it was something that I'll look back on very fondly a few years from now. We got some great pictures, you know, some that I shared, some that I'm keeping for myself. And I often do think about that with like family trips. It's always going to have its tense moments or the little arguments or whatever. But quite often, especially if you can get that one great picture of everybody together, that's the thing that locks this moment in time, that will make you look back on this particular trip. And yeah, you'll remember the stupid box room or the time where you snapped one too many times about something that like really wasn't that important. But the number one thing that you'll remember is that you had a great time with your family and that you had this awesome picture to just like, you know, keep forever, you know. And not to get too sentimental on the podcast, but I just thought it was important to mention that, like, you know, we're all just trying our best, and sometimes it can be pretty hard to do that, especially around family. So yeah, I hope you got some value from from the episode this week, or today, should I say. It was a late one. It is currently 10 past 11 at night, so nobody can question my resolve in getting this out to you guys. But yeah, hope you enjoyed it. Hope you got some value from it. You know, we've got 5 games in 7 nights coming up, as I said, so you can expect a lot more podcasts coming from the Irish Knicks fan crew here. So thank you so much again. And until next time, let's go Knicks!